You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Commander Tom Garcia. Welcome to the American Hour on the USA Talk Radio Network. We got a great show lined up for you today. It's going to be a little shorter than usual. I'll explain that in just a few moments. But I'm broadcasting live today from Hurricane Alley. No, I'm not in Puerto Rico or Dominican. No, I'm in Florida, South Florida, but the hurricane's headed this way. So I spent part of yesterday afternoon and most of the day putting shutters up. And my house is a two-story. Most of the windows upstairs have accordions, so that's not too bad. But some of the windows don't open from the inside, so they have to be placed from the outside. And that means getting on a ladder and climbing up, and it's no fun. And then all of the lower window shutters are the big, heavy, corrugated, got to bolt them on. So it's a lot of work. So I got a pretty good workout today. Everything's buttoned up. And part of the problem is I'm flying out tonight to Brazil. So the next show, Wednesday, we've got Lloyd Marcus. I'll talk to you in a moment about him and let you know more about Lloyd. But many of you, most of you already know who Lloyd Marcus is. But we'll be broadcasting on Wednesday live from Sao Paulo, Brazil. And the information will be on the website by tomorrow about that. But Lloyd Marcus, if you go to Facebook, the American Hour radio show page, go to Facebook, there's where the information is, and a link to the press release for Lloyd Marcus. Going to be a good show. Lloyd is always a fantastic guest. I've known him for several years, and you really don't want to miss that. I'll tell you in a little bit more about that in a few seconds. But today on the show, we're going to talk about the government is coming for your money. And we're going to tie a few things together. Believe it or not, even Obamacare is coming into this play. And Warren Buffett needs to take a math class. You've probably seen that, but we're going to go through a few of the numbers there. So, let's see. Lloyd Marcus on Wednesday. Actually, before we do that, we're going to play a soundbite. And I put this together on the road. It's not the greatest. I'll have to redo it because this is something we're going to play all the time to remind ourselves. But this is sort of like, where is Waldo? Except where is Obama? Okay, here we go.
We will not rest until we reach a day when not one single veteran falls into homelessness. I will not rest until the dream of health care reform is finally achieved in the United States of America. We will not rest until we are succeeding in generating the jobs that this economy needs. I will not rest until businesses are investing again and businesses are hiring again. We will not rest until we build an economy that's ready for America's future. I'm not going to rest. My administration is not going to rest in our efforts to help people who are looking to find a job. We will not rest until this well is shut, the environment is repaired, and the cleanup is complete. My administration will not rest until every American who is able and ready and willing to work can find a job.
Well, there you have it. He's not going to rest. I'd like to know what his definition of rest is. For me, rest is not working. That's pretty much anything that involves not working. That doesn't mean just sitting in a chair or in a bed and sleeping. No, that means not working. So I might be out with my friends. I might be out to dinner. I might be playing golf or tennis or at the gym. That's all rest. That's not work. So where is he for these 10 days? He's working really hard at resting. And this guy takes more vacations than any president. And with the kind of situation we've got going on now and the problems that we've got a debt that I quite honestly don't think we're going to get out of, not in a pretty way at all. And we're just going to kick it on down the road and put it on the backs of our children. Well, so that's why I play it. We've got to remember, keep our eyes on the target. And the target is turning this country around. So when the president says he will never rest, he will not rest, that's just goes to show you the kind of things that he and his administration say, stuff that's just not true. They rest all the time. I don't think there's a president in modern history that has gotten more rest than him. I think he's the number one rester of all. So in any case, Let's talk about Lloyd Marcus coming on Wednesday. He has toured with the Tea Party Express. If you've seen, there's lots of different Tea Party groups and little local Tea Party groups, and they can call themselves Tea Party because nobody's, claimed that as some kind of copyrighted name. Well, he's been touring with the Tea Party Express, and I don't know that that's an exclusive deal, that he's a member with them. It's just sort of a group of people that got together, and there's some people that probably own that and registered that, et cetera. But he has toured with them for a few years now, and they go all the way across the country and generally and work their way back and put on a show. Now, it's not a musical or anything like that, although Lloyd sings, and he's written several patriotic songs, one of which we're going to be playing for you, one of his new songs on Wednesday. And he usually does the MC for the Tea Party Express. So they have all kinds of different people, local people, politicians come up and talk, and patriots come up and talk at the rally, wherever it may be held, in whichever city, et cetera. And he MCs that, and then he does some singing as well. So very interesting guy, and he is a conservative, a true conservative, and blogs, writes for different online websites and maybe even some print publications. We'll ask him all about that on Wednesday, but got some great articles. If you just go to Lloyd Marcus, and that's spelled L-L-O-Y-D, Marcus, marcus.org, you'll find his website and all kinds of information about him. He's writing articles all the time, writes some great articles. I mean, I love reading his stuff. So if you want to see a true conservative and patriot and an entertainer, and pretty much a star among the Tea Party crowds, patriot crowds, all of that, then you don't want to miss Lloyd Marcus. So that's going to be this Wednesday. Now, on Thursday, I'm sorry, on the 31st, I meant to say on the 31st, we've got, and I think I close that down, we've got Jack Cassell, and let me see if I pulled his, oh, there he is right there. I just pulled it up. Dr. Jack Cassell, who is the doctor who put that sign on his door that said, if you voted for Obama, seek urologic care elsewhere. I've met him. His practice is in the Orlando area, and I met him a couple years ago. Really nice guy. He actually came to it was a candidate meeting. I was speaking. This is back when I was running for Congress, and he came, and I spoke, and it may have been something else. It may not have been just for me. I don't believe it was, but it was some type of gathering, and there may have been some other candidates there. He was there, and I got to meet him and talk to him briefly. Well, he's going to be coming on the show on the 31st. Now, this is important because he had a perspective back then, before Obamacare passed, didn't want it, didn't like it, and there were reasons. Now that we've had some time for time to pass and see some things occur and find out more about that bill, as Nancy Pelosi said, we got to pass this so we can find out what's in it. Wow. Anyway, we want to find out his perspective now, looking back on it, if his mind has changed about anything, and I can tell you it hasn't, I know that, but he's certainly got a new perspective now. Now, speaking of healthcare reform, a lot of people I run into say, but Tom, something's got to be done. Something's got to be done. Well, yeah, something's got to be done. And really the place for that is at the state level. And I'm going to read to you a few excerpts out of a book from a friend of mine. He wrote this, and it came out before Obamacare passed. And I know there's some people who get offended when you call it Obamacare, because it's actually was written and passed by the Senate, and then the House, and then the President signed it. But he pushed very hard for it, and he wanted it badly. He doesn't know what's in it. He doesn't really care what's in it, as evidenced by people asking him questions about things. Well, you know, yeah, well, it might be. I don't know about that one. Yeah. So he doesn't really care. And the other thing is, we've done this discussion in the past. I'm not going to get into it now, but the Senate wrote that bill. The Senate has no authority to write bills that raise revenue, and it clearly raises revenue. They get around that by taking a bill from the House that has passed in the House and gutting it, literally deleting everything in it with their First Amendment. So they begin writing amendments to the entire bill, but it's a blank bill with nothing but amendments. How do you amend nothing? Totally unconstitutional, absolutely not what our founders intended. They didn't want the Senate, who don't represent the people, to be writing bills that raise revenue. That would be taxation without representation. So they do it, and they do it all the time. So that's how the Senate wrote our health care bill that we have today. And it's not an SB, Senate Bill 3590, it's HR 3590, but that's an aside. So before that bill was signed into law, my friend Dr. James DeJerome wrote this book called The Cure for the American Healthcare Malady. He outlines about the first half of the book all of the different socialistic-type programs around the world and why they're failures. He, his family's from Europe, Italy, and he spent quite a bit of time in Europe over his life, and he's seen the socialistic healthcare there and known people that have paid the ultimate price by being in that system. And he's gone up to Canada and talked with folks up there. I'm going to read you just a few things out of his book, and you can find it on Amazon. It's The Care, it's The Cure for the American Healthcare Malady by Dr. James DeJerome, and that's DeGerome. Now, I'm going to turn to one of the first things in here. Or this is toward the back of the book, but what factors control the cost of medical care? And he says, he's got a bunch of bullet points here. Were you aware that the principal cause of high health care policy premiums was special interest state mandates? Oh, and I know this. Yes, sirree. I mean, here's an example. Similar health care policies, because of special interest state mandates, not the federal government, the state, can range from $809 in Kentucky to $3,900 in New Jersey. Now, what's a mandate? Let's talk about what a mandate is. A mandate is your state legislature passing a law that says to any insurance company, if they want to do insurance in your state, you know, sell insurance in your state, that they are going to have certain provisions in their health care that they provide, their insurance that they provide. For example, prenatal care, postnatal care. You know, if you're a single man in the state of Florida, you're paying for pre- and postnatal care, and you don't have kids, you don't have a wife, but you're paying for it. This is what's called spreading the wealth. Those of us that don't need smoking cessation, acupuncture, chiropractic care, on and on and on, we're all paying for it. Now, you're probably saying, well, I still don't understand what you're talking about, Tom. It's the mandate that says to the insurance company, instead of Tom Garcia going to the chiropractor and saying, I'd like my back cracked, and then paying $100 because that's what he charges, you will cover that for Mr. Garcia so that he only has to pay $15 when he goes to see the chiropractor. Well, the insurance company says, geez, if we're going to have to cover those costs for the people that actually do that, we're going to have to raise everybody's rates because all those people are paying is their copayment. We're paying the rest. So we have to raise everybody's rates. In Florida, we have 44 mandates. And you say, why do we end up with all these mandates, Tom? It's because our state legislators cut deals. They have, for example, the chiropractic, and I'm not saying this has happened, I'm just throwing this out there as an example. The Chiropractic Care Association of America comes to one of the state or several state legislators, typically hands them a check for some PAC money, and says, by the way, we'd really like to have a mandate in such and such upcoming bill, if you could put an amendment on there, or rider, or some other such thing, so that Floridians can get chiropractic care with a copayment and not have to pay the high, high prices, because chiropractic care is really, really important for people. Now, if you're a chiropractor out there, you know a chiropractor, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I'm just saying I'm not going to one. I don't need it. But there are plenty of people that do, and that's fine. But now I'm subsidizing them going. So now that's what happens from that angle. Now another special interest group, like the Acupuncture Association of America, if there is such a thing, goes to another or other legislators and says the same thing and probably gives them a check too. Then those legislators get together and say to each other, if you support my amendment, I'll support yours, and da-da-da. So that's how we end up with 44 mandates. Each mandate raises the care of cost, or the cost of care in Florida, from 0.1 to 0.5%. I'm sorry, not 0.1, but from 1% to 5%. So with 44 mandates, we've just about doubled the cost, depending on the different costs. So it varies, but almost doubled the cost of health insurance in Florida from what basic care would be. In other words, I go and see my regular doctor. If I need to go to a specialist, there are certain specialists that are covered, you know, on and on. But all these special interest groups that I have no need for, and many of you have no need for, we're paying for those, okay? And that's why in Kentucky, you can get basic care. In Florida, our legislators did allow some insurance companies to come in and provide health care with no mandates. But there's no limitation on how much they can raise your rates if you actually get seriously sick. So our legislators pretty much screwed us on both ends. But they can pat themselves on the back and say, look, no mandates, cheap insurance. You know what? It's cheaper to not even have insurance because you've got about the same amount of coverage. So that's what's occurred in Florida. And many of you may be saying, well, I want the federal government to stop that. Well, Florida is a sovereign state. It's the reason they get to issue driver's licenses and make you have car insurance. The federal government can't make you have car insurance. The states can. Okay? So insurance is not something that the Constitution says the federal government can make you have. The federal government can tax you, but insurance, no. That's like when FDR said that Social Security, oh, it's insurance. It's not a tax. It's insurance. But then the Supreme Court said, you can't make people buy insurance. Oh, no, no, no. It's actually a tax. So it's a tax. So the federal government can only tax us and can only do what the Constitution says. That's why the states get to do that. And the states have the sovereign right to do that. So let me give you an explanation of that. This whole concept of shopping across state borders is unconstitutional, would never stand for the federal government to say, Tom, you can go to Georgia where car insurance is cheaper and get car insurance, but reside in Florida and not meet Florida's car insurance mandates. See what I'm saying? Florida has the right to enforce Florida driving insurance and home insurance. For example, I have a hurricane rider, as we speak, a hurricane's on its way, on my house. That's a huge deductible. So if the hurricane does any damage, $4,000, boom, right straight out of my pocket's the first deductible, besides other deductibles, normal deductibles. Could I go to Georgia? Well, let's pick a state that doesn't really get hurricanes. Let's say Tennessee. I go to Tennessee and say, I want to buy insurance for my home. And since you guys don't force hurricane insurance up here in Tennessee, but I want to live in Florida and have my house there. It doesn't work that way. You see what I'm saying? It's the same thing with health insurance. It's no different than all the other insurances. It's a state issue. We've got to stop trying to ask the federal government to solve our state problems. Even if our state is screwed up, believe me, it's a lot easier to get rid of state representatives, state legislators, than it is federal legislators. Okay? Go after your state legislators. Start paying attention. I'll bet most of you out there listening, I'll bet 99.9% could not call in and tell me, without looking it up first on the internet, who your state representative and state senator is. You don't know. We don't pay attention to those things. That's why we've gotten screwed with things like health insurance. So when my friend Dr. DeJerome says that the single biggest cost of high health care policy premiums is special interest state mandates, he is not kidding. That is the truth. That is the truth, because I did my research on that before even reading his book, and I was shocked to find out about those state mandates. So let's see. Well, we got lots of people in the chat room. I hope you guys understand. I do not have my co-host Paul with me today. I'm flying solo, so for me to be talking and answering calls, if we get any calls, and then chatting at the same time will be kind of difficult. But anyway, there's some interesting conversations going on there. Like Florida is run by Nazis. Yeah, sometimes you think about it. You think that way. In any case, okay, so let's take another quote from DeJerome's book. And now I have to switch glasses because now I'm reading. It gets to be a drag getting old, doesn't it? Okay, were you aware that the American government and private industry spend $111 billion, that is approximately $111 billion, on medical R&D yearly, that socialized healthcare systems, de-socialized healthcare systems, like Canada, France, Italy, and UK combined spend $700 to $800 million? So not even 1% of what our R&D is here through private medicine, private pharmaceuticals, et cetera. So the big bad pharmaceuticals, let's go after them. All they're going to do is pass the costs on to you and me. So there are always problems in every industry, but that's not the solution. Socialized medicine, I know for a fact, through my own wife's experience, she takes a particular thyroid medication that is not available in Canada. How do I know that? She's Canadian. When I met her, they wouldn't give it to her. And really, what it was they wouldn't do the test. And it took me years to figure out why they wouldn't do the test to determine if she needed this other medication. It turns out they don't have it in Canada. No Havi. Don't have it. Nada. Not a thing in Canada. Because they've just decided that the majority of people don't need it. If you happen to be the person that needs it, you're screwed. And she would be much very unhealthy if she weren't taking this extra medication. And she actually goes on a quarterly basis, gets her hormone levels checked, and they keep tweaking it. Wouldn't happen in Canada. Nope. Not because they don't want to do the test and can't do the test. They just don't carry the medication. So she has a much better quality of life. Let's take a look at something else. Now, Dr. G. Jerome was in the Air Force. And I can tell you from my 22 years in the Navy and growing up in an Air Force family, this is exactly what he's talking about. He said, this is on page 71, my days in the Little Rock Air Force Base Clinic were filled with malingerers, runny noses, and achy muscles for which no paying patient would see a doctor. The malingerers made up approximately 90% of the daily caseload. Overutilization is a serious problem in socialized healthcare delivery, since each of these visits costs the system a lot of money. Very true. Military health care can be very inefficient. And since back in those days, you know, you lived on base, everybody goes to the base hospital, man, it would just be filled with retirees and dependents and people that, yeah, just have a runny nose, oh, my back aches a little bit. But if you had to pay a $15 copay, those very people would not go to the doctor. They'd just go buy some Advil and some cold medication, whatever it is they might think they need, over the counter and get some rest at home, like we do today. Socialized medicine in Canada and in Europe and other countries like that see this very, very problem. And that's precisely why they have to ration. So this idea that we're going to make sure everybody has health insurance and nobody can be denied, and I'm all for that, and D. Jerome outlines in his book how to make that happen. But the process we're using through Obamacare is really opening the doors wide open to be like the healthcare system that I got to experience in the military, which as a officer, and not just as an officer, but as a military aviator, as a pilot, I got extra special care because I didn't just go in and see anybody. I went and saw a flight surgeon because I could only see a flight surgeon because there are certain things you can and can't do and medications, et cetera, that would affect a pilot and ground them, and you have to know whether to ground them or not. So you need a specialized flight surgeon. So I always got to see the cream of the crop. But when you're talking about dependents and retirees and everybody else, just what D. Jerome described in his book, that's what goes on, and that's what we're opening our healthcare system up, the malingerers and the runny noses and the achy backs, because it's free. I don't have to pay anything. I just get to go, and it's provided to me because we've spread the wealth. We're going to make everybody, just like the state healthcare mandates, we're going to make those that actually have some money pay for me. Now, I hear this all the time, but Tom, we're already paying. Well, you know what? We may already be paying, but that's by choice. We don't have to pay. Nobody has to pay, but you at least have the freedom of choice. That's called free will. That's called liberty. If you want to take this, but we're already paying thing to a whole new level, how about your grocery bill? Tom, you're already paying for your groceries. Let's let the government buy your groceries for you because they'll do it much more efficiently, and you'll be a lot healthier, and that will help drive healthcare costs down. All right, let's let the government do all kinds of things that I'm already paying for and screwed up, just like the military healthcare system was. And it's gotten better, but for the most part, the reason the military healthcare system's gotten better is they booted most of the dependents and other folks out into the private healthcare system. That's TRICARE. So that's why the military system's gotten better. Everybody can't just go line up at the base clinic and get care from the base doctors. No, the active duty, the reservists that are drilling, and et cetera, and that's it. Retirees get to use their Medicare and TRICARE for life benefits and go out into the private sector. So that's how that got cleaned up. All right. There's lots of good things in his book. Check it out. Be sure to check it out, The Cure for the American Healthcare Malady. And we're going to move on now to how the government's coming for your money. And most of you may be aware of this, but unfortunately, a lot of folks aren't. And I, as a pilot and traveling all the time, I run into people all the time that are clueless about this stuff, absolutely clueless. I run into well-educated other pilots who haven't ever even read the Constitution. It just boggles my mind. But what we're going to look at first is, and I'm sure many of you saw the article first written by Warren Buffett saying, we need to take more money from millionaires and billionaires. Well, there's a great article written by Matt Cover, and I got it from CNSnews.com. There may, I think, were some other articles written about the same thing. It's based on a study by the Tax Foundation talking about how this would work, how Warren Buffett's math would actually work out. So in his August 15th op-ed in, naturally, the New York Times, yeah, the New York Times, they'll print anything, true or not, generally not. It was time to stop coddling the wealthy and called on Congress to raise taxes on those making $1 million or more. Well, guess what? For those making $1 million or more on their annual income tax form, fill that out, there's 236,883 such households in 2009. And let's see, what else? 10 million, people making 10 million or more, there's 8,274. So Buffett said, and I'd raise their rates too. And not just income tax, but dividends, capital gains. So in other words, your capital gains rate that you'll pay on maybe a capital gain at, say, $100,000 isn't going to be taxed at the $100,000 rate. Because you make more money, we're going to put you in a special bracket by yourself. Now, first of all, Buffett has to understand that that's completely unconstitutional. Tax one person more than somebody else based on something that has nothing to do with the actual income you're taxing, based on some totally different thing. That's called, Mr. Buffett, discrimination, bigotry. Okay. Anyway, but let's take a look at the actual numbers that Matt Cover came up with if we were actually going to tax. So at the Tax Foundation, they found out that if you taxed the nation's millionaires at 50%, so take half of all their income, even eliminating all loopholes, quote, loopholes and deductions, you would reduce the deficit by 8%. Now, that's the annual deficit. And the national debt, 1%. Wow, that's pretty impressive, Mr. Buffett. You really made a difference for our country. Whoa. And we know that the people that are in that range are business owners. I mean, who's making that kind of money? Yeah, you got some traders and investors and that kind of thing. But even investors that are buying property and then building a structure, et cetera, they're hiring construction companies. They're hiring people to do that work. You're talking technically small businesses. $1 million is not much for a business to be bringing in. But we're going to go after them because it's just not right that they have that money. We're going to tax achievers. Okay. Now he talks about, that tax, the 50%, take 50% of their wealth, would only bring in $120 billion. So here's what Democrats are really doing to us when they say, we need revenue. Well, they need some revenue so they can spend more money. We're still going to keep going into debt at a horrific rate. They just want the masses to somehow feel like, okay, they're doing something, but they have no plans whatsoever to be putting the brakes on. This is a smokescreen and a cover. Now let's see about those making $10 million or more. The Tax Foundation found that if you tax these people at 100%, just take all their money, you'd net the government $186 billion. That would reduce the annual deficit by 12% and the national debt by an additional 2%. Not going to happen. So this is why I titled this episode today, The Government's Coming After Your Money. See, if we look at the numbers, what our president, his administration, and all the libtards are telling us, that we're going to go after the wealthy and that's going to solve our problems. We'll make some cuts, but we're going to go after the wealthy and big corporations. That's going to solve our problems. Well, let's take a look at going after big corporations. We've just proven that going after the wealthy isn't enough. So where's the government going to get more money? You and me. Now, first of all, we have to note that the president talks always about millionaires and billionaires, except he's going to tax anybody making over $250,000. I don't know if he's been to math class either. Maybe he went to the same math class that Warren Buffett went to. But $250,000 is not a million. And with the inflation and depression of our dollar right now, $250,000 is worth a lot less. I realize people only making $50,000. It's a whole lot less, and they're impacted much more than the rich are by the devaluation of the dollar. But let's think about this for a second. The president says, well, the wealthy can afford it. And you know what? Let's just go with that premise. The wealthy can afford it. But we can see that the wealthy aren't enough. And we're not going to take all of their wealth or they're going to leave the country. They're just going to get out of here. We're not going to take all of their wealth or they'll stop working. They'll have no incentive. And all of their wealth is not enough. So that means they're going to have to come after you and me. So when the president says the wealthy can afford it, let's just say he's right. But can you afford it? I can't afford it. People in middle class, lower class, poor people can't afford it. But they're going to come after all of us. And how are they going to do it? When you go after a big corporation, you say, we're going to close the loopholes on big oil companies. Oil companies make about 8 to 10% profit margin. Do you think oil companies, if you raise their taxes or close loopholes that would cost them an extra 10% in taxes, that they're now just going to break even and not have any corporate profits? No, they're going to pass it on to you and me. Let me give you a real simple little example. I used to do some consulting work for several years after I retired from the Navy, and I had an S-Corp. I didn't pay taxes. The only way I paid taxes was at the end of the year, if the money had not been dispersed into cost structure and salary to me, and then, you know, all the costs that I may have, what was left over was divided up between the principals. The principals were my wife and myself. I was 80%. She had 20% of the stock. So 80% of the dividends came to me as a dividend and to her, and then we paid taxes on that. But that was a small portion of the total money that I earned. Even though I never made a lot of money, it was a small portion of the total money that I would earn for that year. Now, if somebody had come up with a great idea that S-Corps are now going to have to pay a 10% tax, do you think I would have just eaten that? No. I would have raised my rates by 10%. I'm not going to pay that tax. My customers are going to pay that tax. That's precisely what businesses, big businesses, are going to do to you and me. They're going to raise their prices. So when they say go after big corporations and close all the loopholes and subsidies, what they're saying is we're not going to allow big corporations to charge you less for their products and services. We're going to ask them to charge you more and pass that extra money on to us, the government. So there's one thing right there, but let's take a look at what kind of things that the government could go after that's going to impact your daily life and make you pay a higher equivalent, really, quite honestly, income tax. How about the electricity? How many people out there, and we live in Florida, are using air conditioning today? Yeah, that's going to get a tax put on it by the federal, extra tax put on it by the federal government, because it's the big bad energy companies. Got to go after them because they're big and bad and evil. How about, like, I work for an airline. Let's figure out some extra taxes we can throw on airlines and the fuel they use and on, because they're big, bad, and evil. Yeah, when you're going on vacation and you get there safely and on time, boy, they're really big, bad, and evil, aren't they? Yeah, any case. So we're going to tax them. So everybody, you know, that uses – a lot of people fly. I mean, we fly. Hundreds of thousands of people, probably millions of people a year. A lot of people fly and need to fly. But we're going to take some more of their money, and a lot of those people are not millionaires and billionaires. In fact, the vast majority are not. Let's see, what else? Oh, yeah, the gasoline going in your car. And, wow, let's even come up with a way just to tax the distance you drive. Forget additional gasoline taxes. If you want to drive your car, mileage, they're going to come up with all these ways to get money from you and me. It's not going to be the corporations that are going to pay this. Okay, we beat that dead horse, but what else are they going to do? I promise you, you're going to see in this president's proposal, his economic recovery proposal, a VAT, a value-added tax. And here's why it hits you and me so hard. Because let's say somebody in the U.S. is making T-shirts, small company making T-shirts, and they buy their material from, it doesn't matter where, let's say Canada, buy their material from Canada, their cotton, whatever it is they're using. They have to pay a value-added tax on that. So let's say it's 5%. So they pay 5% on that initial cost. Then when they go to sell their T-shirt to a outlet, whether it be Walmart or Target or any other stores that would buy it, Walmart and Target and everybody else have to pay the government a value-added tax again, because that's what's called value added. We're continuing to add value, when in fact, what we're continuing to do is continuing to add cost to the American people. That's what it should be called. A cost additional tax, CO2, cost, or CAT, CAT, cost additional tax. So Walmart pays a 5% tax. And then guess what? When you go to buy it at Walmart, you pay a 5% VAT. So the government rakes in 15%. Obviously, the first 5% was on a smaller amount of money. The second 5% was on a maybe slightly larger amount of money. And then the final 5%. So you've paid, and they're all passing the costs on to you. They're not eating those costs, no way. You, the consumer, are not paying a 5% value-added tax when you buy it. You're paying something closer to 11%, maybe 12% on the price, the purchase price of that product. 12%. So everything you buy from now on, food, clothing, any appliance in your house, I got a dryer that's not going to last much longer, and I got to go buy one of those here pretty soon. If there was a value-added tax, tack another 11, 12% on top of that. Start adding all these extra costs, all this extra revenue that the government's going to take in, and come up with what you think it might. And I haven't done an exact calculation, but I estimate that your annual income tax could very easily go up by about 10% with all of these other taxes added into your life. 10%. So if you're in the 22% bracket right now, your taxes are going up to 32%. If you're in the 15% tax bracket, your taxes are going up to 25%. The government is coming for your money. Businesses do not pay taxes. That's the bottom line. Businesses do not pay taxes. You, the consumer, pay all of the taxes that those businesses would pay, or they would just be out of business. They couldn't operate. They've got to pass it on to you. So the government is coming for your money, and you watch. You just watch his economic recovery. It's not going to be about creating jobs. It's going to be all fluff about creating jobs, but it's going to be about how to get middle-class money. We're going to raise taxes on the wealthy because they're bad, terrible, and evil, and they don't deserve that money. We know that. That's what this administration is all about. But you, the middle class, they're going to do it in a more stealthy way by going after big, evil businesses and everyday necessities and a value-added tax. And the way they're going to say this to the consumer is, and Nancy Pelosi's already done this. She's already talked about this in the past. It's just 5%. Just 5%. Come on, be patriotic and pay your 5%. Nancy, it's more like 11 or 12%. And that's a lot of money coming out of my family's budget so that you can keep government big and grow it even bigger. Yeah. Okay. So I've got to go fly here in a little bit, and I spent the last 2 days putting up shutters. And I realize that a lot of you are probably saying, but Tom, it's kind of going out toward the east now. Yeah. A few years ago, we had a hurricane that was headed towards Miami. And then it veered to the east. And it actually started going due east. And then all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, it looped around and came straight back and whacked Miami. Very few people were prepared or ready and did a lot of damage. I'm going to be out of town. And if it suddenly starts veering towards South Florida, my flight that I'm flying back from Brazil Thursday or Wednesday night, getting in Thursday morning, could very well just be canceled. They could just say, stay there, just wait it out. So I don't have a chance. So I hate to say it, but my timing was bad on this one. It's been really good in the past, but my timing's bad on this one. I had to put them up. Not one of my neighbors has put one single shutter up. And they may be, if I didn't have to go, I'd wait it out. But unfortunately, I don't get a chance to wait it out. So, remember broadcasting Wednesday with Lloyd Marcus live from Sao Paulo, Brazil, not in the hurricane hurricane zone. And hopefully this thing's going to pull away from Florida, and my efforts were for naught. But I got to protect my house. So, any case, anybody else in Florida, keep an eye out on this hurricane. I wish you the best. And I hope that those that are being hit right now, Puerto Rico got hit. We know Haiti can't take this kind of stuff, and they're going to get hit. It looks like in the Dominican, and they got hit by that last hurricane a little bit. It stalled out right there. Doesn't look like this one's going to do it. So our thoughts and prayers are with them, and hope it moves away and then just goes out to the northeast and just stays away from the U.S., but might not do that this time. So I'll be watching it, and hopefully we will have good news to report on Wednesday. But join us on Wednesday. Thanks for listening in today. I believe Paula will be back with me on Wednesday, but of course we will have Lloyd Marcus. Don't miss that. And as always, thanks for joining us. Steve Rosenblum was listening in today. Don't miss his show, 2 o'clock. Go to the website, usaradionetwork.com, and you get a link to where he does his shows. He's got some great guests, and check out his guests because he always has really good guests on his Saturday show, which is at 6 p.m. So don't miss the Steve Rosenblum show, and he does it co-hosts with Daria DiGiovanna. DiGiovanni, the conservative diva, and she does another show as well and some other stuff. So check them out. Great shows. And everybody have a great week. We'll see you in a couple days. Thanks and be safe.
Listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.